All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week one edition of the show. It is here. Here we are. It feels so good to say it. It's a game week, and we're into those rhythms and those routines now as Sunday at 1 p.m. is back, not just with the Bucks-Falcons game on Sunday, but just Sunday at 1 p.m. in general. It just feels so good. Even this past Sunday, we had a full weekend of college football on Labor Day weekend. They threw a couple of Sunday games in there for us, but those were later. But starting this weekend, for the next 18 weeks, Sunday at 1, you know what it means. There's going to be games going on all over the place. The 1 o'clock slot, the 4 o'clock slot, Sunday night football, Thursday night football, Monday night football. We got Friday football in Brazil for week one. All of it. Just give it all to me. And so today's show is always one of my favorite of the year as we are on the brink of a new campaign. And how it will end, we don't know. We hope it ends a full, and I mean a full, 6 months from now in the Bay Area of the other side of the country, out in Santa Clara with the Bucks in the Super Bowl. Will that happen? You know, odds are probably against it, but the odds are against it for almost every team. And the Bucks at least have a team that you go into the season thinking, okay, you know, let's see what happens here. And listen, I'm not as high on the Bucks as some other people are who think double-digit wins is just assumed. We'll talk about all of it on the show today. We always do this for the first week of the season. You know, I never make record predictions or anything like that, but I always give you my outlook. Everybody's got an outlook. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the specific week one game at Atlanta, which is a big one right out of the gate in the division. And in general, just talk about how much fun all of it is. And that's the first thing I want to get to as we set the scene today, because I make this little speech and I do this little spiel every year about football season. But this is my favorite time of year. Probably for most of you listening, it's the same way. If you're somebody who listens to this show and if you're somebody who goes to Joe Bucks Fan, it's probably that way, you know, just based on the odds. You're football-adjacent people. And I always say it. I mean, I love sports in general. I love lots of sports. I love baseball, even though the Rays haven't had a great year and they're not really, I mean, they're on the very, very outer fringe of the pennant race. But even still, I always love baseball. First sport I ever grew up playing was baseball, like a lot of kids. Love hockey. Lightning are going to be opening training camp soon, and they'll start their regular season coming up in October and all that stuff. Love it. You know, basketball, I'm not as big in the NBA, but love college basketball. My Gators won the national championship this past March. Love golf. Love horse racing. On and on and on and on and on. Tennis, I've been loving the U.S. Open, which is also another reason why this is one of the best times of year. Okay? But they all pale in comparison to football, because even though I love all those other sports, there's only one sport that goes beyond the actual sport. There's only one sport, at least for me, that is a mood, that is an attitude, that is a vibe, and that's truly a state of mind. Because the seasons come and the seasons go the rest of the other 8 months of the year. But when fall hits, and even late summer, and training camp opens, and it's hot out there, and there's no games yet, but you kind of see the light of the tunnel at the end there, and you kind of start to realize, okay, we get preseason games, college games are start. It completely changes the way I feel about life. And I always say this, maybe I have issues, or maybe I need to get a life of my own that's more satisfying the other 8 months of the year. But like, for example, this past Saturday, woke up Saturday morning. It was the first full Saturday of college football. Now, everybody likes Saturday, right? It's the weekend, you know, just in general. But how I felt this past Saturday, which was August 30th, compared to any other, if you took some random Saturday even 3 weeks ago, let's say, let alone 3 months ago or in the middle of May or something like that, the way I felt this past Saturday, just waking up and getting out of bed, was like euphoric. Like I felt like 80% better mood, right? And I know a lot of you know exactly what I'm talking about, but I was just, without any other things being different in my life than all the other 52 Saturdays of the year, or at least the 30-something other non-football Saturdays, whatever it is, man, I felt so good. And even right now as I'm doing this show, I still feel it. I'm recording this show on Wednesday at 12:39 is right now when I'm looking up on my microwave in my kitchen, and that's what it says. You take any random Wednesday at 12:39 throughout the rest of the year, pretty ho-hum, right? I mean, it's the middle of a weekday, whatever. I'm in a great mood right now just because tomorrow, first of all, I'm looking forward to Cowboys-Eagles. I don't even care who the teams would have been either. I mean, obviously, it's the defending Super Bowl champion always opens up, but it could be anybody. And I know that that's going to kick off five straight days of more football. Really, and until you get in later of the year, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to look ahead or rush through any of this, but in the beginning part of the year where the schedule is relatively stable before they start playing like MAC games and college football and all these random nights of the week, and even those don't really count, you only have to get through 2 days of the week without football, Tuesday and Wednesday. Those are like, it's like a reverse weekend weekday schedule. Like instead of a five-day work week and two weekend days, we get a five-day football week and two non-football days. Once you get to Thursday, you got Thursday night football. Friday, you've got high school football, which I love. I've already been to two high school football games in the first 2 weeks of their season, going to see Plant, which is right down the street from where I live. And then you've got some college games on Friday nights as well they put on TV. Obviously, Saturday is Saturday, and then Sunday is Sunday with the NFL. And then you get Monday night football on Monday night, and then you just got to get through Tuesday and Wednesday. But the point I'm making here is, I love baseball, but I don't go, oh, man, it's baseball season. You know, okay, well, hey, baseball season's like 800,000 games. Hockey is like 9 months of the year. It's hockey season, it feels like. Same with the NBA. You know, those other sports aren't like that. In football, I think, you know, one, the actual game of football itself is my favorite. But two, beyond that, it's just the way the season is structured and the once-a-week rhythms of it and the scarcity, right? Scarcity creates demand, doesn't it? Whether it's demand for money or demand for supply or demand for feelings, you know, emotions. So that scarcity of football, like football is scarce. Your team's going to play 17 games, hopefully more, in the playoffs. Your favorite college team's going to play 12 games again, maybe usually 13 a bowl game. If you're lucky, you get in the playoffs, play 14 or 15. But that's it. Add that all up. That's 30-something days out of the year where you get that. The least of any sport by far as just the amount of games played. And that's why it's so great. It's another reason why, even though I can't get enough, I kind of can get enough because I always say, hey, you know, we don't need to add an 18th game. I didn't think we needed to add a 17th game. We don't need to kind of, let's not look a gift horse in the mouth here, you know, and say, oh, more, more, more. You got to kind of keep the special things special. They're special for a reason. It's because there ain't that much of it. And if you start adding more and more and more, you know, I never want to get to that point where it feels routine. And it hasn't happened yet because I am jacked up for Sunday at 1 p.m. when the Bucks take on the Falcons at the, whatever, Mercedes-Benz. You know, I'm off using corporate sponsorship names if I don't have to now, especially with what happened with the Ice Palace. Not that I don't care who the name is, but I mean, you can't keep calling these stadiums different names over and over. Atlanta hasn't changed the name of theirs in a while, but it'll be a place that the Bucks should have won last year. Remember the Thursday night game last year where they had a chance to seal that away late, couldn't get it done. A missed face mask call that should have gone when Bucky Irving got his face mask pulled didn't help, but there were other reasons too. And the Bucks ended up getting swept by their biggest threat in the division last year and still ended up being able to win the division. I would not necessarily count on that happening again. And like I always say, I mean, the way the NFL division setup is now since 2002 with four teams, and every year is different, but usually there's one team in a division, like one who's not really a threat. And there are some divisions where everybody's pretty good. I mean, it happens sometimes, but usually there's one team you can kind of, I don't want to say toss, but this year I think that's the Saints for the Bucks in the NFC South, for all of the teams in the NFC South. I don't think the Saints are a threat to win the division. And then you say, okay, well, Carolina's probably not as likely either. But Carolina, there's a scenario where I could see, because things happen all the time in sports that surprise you. There's a scenario where I could see any of the other three teams winning the division and I wouldn't be completely like jaw on the floor. You know, like if you told me, hey, Carolina's going to win the division, I wouldn't think that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. I don't think they will. I think the Bucks and the Falcons are probably the two top teams, but it wouldn't be nuts if Carolina popped up. Bryce Young was getting a lot better after being initially benched and, you know, they're improving. And then obviously Atlanta really should have won the division last year, but the Bucks were able to outlast them down the stretch, and Atlanta lost some games, and the Bucks got the win. And then, of course, the defending champions four times over now, the Bucks. By the way, the Buccaneers trying to win their fifth straight NFC South title And we've seen that a few times in the AFC in recent years. But no NFC team has won five straight divisions since when? I'll give you a minute if you want to guess. The last time, if the Bucs do this, it'll be the first team to do this in so many years. It was in the 90s. It was those Cowboy teams. The 92, 93, 94, 95, and 96 Cowboys were the last NFC team to win the division five straight times. The Bucs would be the next one if they can do it this year. I think, and Greg Allman, who covers the Bucs for Fox Sports, he tweeted about this because of somebody on Twitter asked him. I think the Bucs would be the first. Well, we don't know how far they're going to get this year, but if they were to win the division this year and not make it to the conference championship, they'd be the only team to ever win five straight division championships and have no conference championship appearances, let alone actual conference championships, to show for it. Now, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, okay? Because the Bucs could miss the playoffs. They could go, I could see, I always say this, I give you ranges. I'm not going to go down the schedule game by game. Oh, I think the Bucs will be 10-7. People get real specific about stuff that we have no idea how to predict the future. And they're like, yeah, I see the Bucs being 8-4 going into that Week 13 game. Who the hell knows? I have no idea. Nobody does, okay? So I'll give you ranges like I always do, where I would say I'd be really, really surprised if they're worse than this, and I'll really, really surprised if they're better than this. I'd be surprised if the Bucs are worse than 7-10. I could see, and here's the thing about the NFL, like I was just talking about with the scarcity of football, okay? Sample size matters, and football is not a sample size sport. Baseball is a sample size sport. Even hockey and basketball, to a degree, are sample size sports. Football is decidedly not. A couple weird calls, some turnover luck. You know, some years your team is +8 in turnovers, and some years your team is -4. And some of that is skill, but a lot of that is randomness. You know, a big call on, you know, a holding call on a big play in one game in Week 8. It can be the difference of a lot of things. You know, like in baseball, we get upset about a call here or a blown save there, but it all comes out in the wash. They play 162 games. You know, usually, whatever you are, you are that thing by the end of 162 games. It's not like, oh man, we went 92-70, but this team really could have been 108-54. It just, you know, no, it's not how, you know, maybe a game here or there, but football is like that. Like there are 7-10 teams that aren't that different from 10-7 teams. So if this is the type of year where there's bad injury luck or bad turnover luck or bad close, you know, the Bucs don't close out a few close games. Red zone is huge. I mean, like I always tell you guys, even in some random possession in Week 4 in the second quarter of some game, when you've got first and goal on the 8, whether you score a touchdown or kick a field goal there could literally impact your season in a big way. That's what's so great about football. That's why every game feels so big. That's why we all love it. So what I'm saying is, if things don't go well, I could see this team being something like 7-10. I'd be pretty surprised anything worse than that. 6-11, they're better than that. Okay? On the flip side, if things do go well, if they have a relatively healthy team, if they get lots of turnovers, they start picking off more passes, which has been an issue. You know, if a couple of close games go their way or some calls go their way late in these tight games, a PI, a defensive holding, something like that, keeps a drive alive. Little things, right? But these things add up. If it's that kind of year on the good side of it, I think the Bucs potentially could be something like 11-6. I don't think anything, 12-5 maybe. 12-5 is probably the highest you could go where I wouldn't be shocked. I don't think they're any, 13-4, I'd be very surprised. So I see a range for the Bucs anywhere from 7-10 to 11-6, 12-5. Anywhere in there you could say this is what's going to happen this year and I would not be very surprised. Like I could buy any of those scenarios. So obviously we'll see, only one game at a time, and when you only have one game to go on, you're going to want to what? Overreact to it. When you have 8 games to go on, then there's a little more sample size. But after Sunday, we're going to be on this show and all over, not just this show, but all over Twitter and the internet, all over sports talk radio, all over the podcast, all over Joe Bucks fan, whatever it is. And we're going to be really, really, really dialed into whatever happens during those 3 hours starting at 1 p.m. on Sunday. I will tell you this, just based on the night, let's look at this matchup real quick. Based on the numbers, and this is historically, actually, I got the text right here from one of the Joes. I'll tell you what it says, because We always trade little gambling tidbits. And I'm always big on situations in the NFL. I'm always big on teams in this spot historically have done this or that more than I am into specific teams. So this weekend, and this applies to everybody, not just, there's about five games this applies to, not just the Bucs. In the last 10 years, this is 10 years only, in the National Football League, in week one, we're talking about only here, division games, home underdogs, which means home teams in a division game in week one getting points, they are 24-6 against the spread. That's an 80% hit rate. The Falcons are home underdogs in a division game against the Bucs, getting 2.5 points this weekend. So a negative situation, as we term it, a negative situation applies to the Bucs, and a positive situation applies to the Falcons. That doesn't mean I'm predicting a Bucs loss or anything like that, but I always try to find out any situations that may apply to a Bucs game, and I'm talking about this from the standpoint of being a fan. I certainly always look for any situations gambling as well, but I don't gamble on Bucs games. But yeah, Bucs are in a negative situation here on Sunday. And again, doesn't mean anything, doesn't mean they're going to win or lose. I'm just telling you historically in the last decade what teams in that spot have done. Now, as far as what can we look at for this actual football game? Because there are factors at play. Of course, the Bucs are without some key people. Everybody that's supposed to play this weekend is going to, except, I will give you the practice report. The Bucs are on the practice field right now, actually, as I do this show. But everybody's at practice today except for Christian Izzian in the secondary. Benjamin Morrison, after not practicing during camp at all, he's finally out there. Cade Otton's out there. Josh Hayes was out. Obviously, you don't want to see him anywhere but special teams, but he's out there. All the guys that have been dinged are out there. But then you've got the guys who are out, like Tristan Wirfs, like Chris Godwin, like Jalen McMillan. So we're missing our starting left tackle. Charlie Heck will be out there. He's done a good job from what we've seen, and he's done this before. He's not somebody they're just throwing into the fire. So we're down our left tackle. Well, Atlanta's down not one, but two of their right tackles, too, and that matters. And Michael Penix Jr. is left-handed, so the right tackle for them is kind of the equivalent of the left tackle for the Bucs. It's his blind side. And they had a couple guys get hurt. Caleb McGarry and Storm Norton both out for the Falcons. That means they're down to Elijah Wilkinson, who will start at right tackle, who is serviceable. He's not a guy, he's mostly a guard. He's played more guard than he has tackle, although he does have a history at tackle, too, so he can do it. But point being, if you're looking for things that'll tell you, as far as injuries, obviously week one there usually aren't that many, but that's a big one for the Falcons, as is Tristan Wirfs for us. And I want Tristan Wirfs back as soon as possible. I'm only saying what I'm about to say in the context of this one specific game. I think we come out ahead there. If you told me we could have Tristan Wirfs back for this game and they get their guys back, I'm like, no, I'd rather have them weak at right tackle, down to their third guy, scrambling around to find people, when we have Charlie Heck, who I think can be trusted to get out there and give you some quality reps and get you through the football game. Other than that, like I said, no issues with the injuries. Everything looks good. You're going to see everybody you've been planning on seeing. Amika Buka should get the start with a receiver alongside Mike Evans. Sterling Shepard's the number three receiver. Speaking of Buka, who looked great in the preseason, looked great in camp and all those things, but he'll play his first real NFL game on Sunday. I've been hearing a lot. This is one of those things I'm totally not in touch with, because I've always prided myself, going back to when I first started doing sports talk radio at 1470, at 1010, at 620. I've always said I'm a fan first. I grew up my whole life a Bucs fan, lived here my whole life. I'm a fan who gets to do a radio show, but I'm not a journalist. I'm not neutral. I follow these things like as a fan. Even when I'm not doing radio, I follow them just like all of you all do. So I feel like I'm pretty in touch with the Buccaneer fan base. But I'll tell you one thing where I'm not in touch, and that's this whole jersey thing. So they did the whole cuts with the training camp. Guys move on, guys get cut, and other guys' numbers come open, and they can get a jersey number maybe they didn't have at first. Like Amika Buka, for example, who wore number 2 in college. Well, Kyle Trask is number 2 for the Bucs, or was. And then it looked like, okay, well, Buka's going to wear number 9 for the Bucs. Cool, fine. Kyle Trask, kind of surprisingly, I guess, or at least it was surprising if I told you at the beginning of camp he was going to be cut. But once he was cut, Abuka was like, well, there's my old college number. Okay, I'm going back to number 2. I thought nothing of it, right? Well, apparently it's a big deal to fans because I guess people go out and buy jerseys like before guys even played. So a bunch of people went out and bought Emeka Ibuka jerseys, that the number 9 on them. And now everybody's like, oh, what? You know, we're number 2 now. So first of all, yeah, I'm not, listen, different strokes, man. I'm not saying I'm this cool guy who's like too cool, you know, like I always found the jersey thing weird. I have a polo shirt with the Bucks logo. I wear 2 games. I have several Bucks t-shirts. I wear team memorabilia. I've never been a jersey guy. And especially not a jersey guy with like the dude's name on the back. Like I'll wear a blank. Well, actually I wouldn't wear a blank jersey. I just don't wear jerseys. But some people do, and I'm not making fun of you guys, but like really, like you ran out and dropped like $200 on a jersey before the guys even played. And is it like, it kind of seems like middle school, like you just want to be the first ones to have it? Or I don't understand. I really don't understand. So I didn't think it was a big deal, but it was. And so the reporters, Greg Allman was one of them, went ahead and, you know, looked into it. And they are, I guess, especially if you bought from the Bucks team store, if you did something online that's like not NFL shop or not the Bucks, I don't know how it works, but they're supposed to let you exchange it for the new number if you want. Or maybe you can keep it and it's a collector's item. I have no idea. But he switched. He was the biggest nephew. You guys switched numbers after the final round of training camp cuts. Riley Dixon, the punter, who was wearing number 92 because they didn't really have what he wanted. And he wore a number in the 90s in college as a walk-on. But since Ibuka switched, now Riley Dixon's number 9. And so I don't think anybody's got a Riley Dixon number 92 jersey they need to trade in. But if you do, and you bought it from the Bucks or from the NFL shop, you can probably get it done, you know. I just want to throw it out there because I know people listen to the show and I know not everybody's like me and I know it's very presumptuous of me to assume I'm such a cool guy just because I don't wear jerseys. I do have a Lightning jersey, an old Lightning jersey from the original, you know, like 92, 93. And I do wear that sometimes for very, very special occasions only. And I don't wear it to games. I usually like wear it on a certain day or something like that. And that doesn't have anybody's name on the back or anything. But anyway, point is, just thought you guys should know that, so I wanted to make sure. I know Tez Johnson also switched, I think, a few other people. And so, anyway, email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at bobbygameday, and look me up there, follow me, message me, whatever you want. I'm easy to find online anywhere if you have comments or questions or anything like that. So, oh, I forgot Luke Getteke. Forgot that part of news, too. Luke Getteke, you've probably heard by now. You saw it on Joe Bucks Fan. But Luke Getteke gets the 4-year extension, which will add on. This is supposed to be, you know, the last year of his contract. Now that's taken care of. Bucks are pretty short up front. I mean, they've got both their tackles and their center, Graham Barton, who they just drafted last year. They've got those guys locked up multiple years coming up. And so Jason Light, again, being proactive, getting out ahead of it, getting the guys in. Salary cap's not really an issue. It's been going up a lot. And so they're taken care of there. Speaking of the salary cap, I did want to talk a little bit about the Micah Parsons thing real quick. Because I know a lot of people, when that whole thing was going down with him and Dallas and Jerry Jones, were speculating about trades. And there were a few teams thrown out there. And a lot of our own fans said, hey, why not the Bucks? And actually, fans always say stuff like that. You know, they come up with these preposterous scenarios and things that are never going to happen in a million years. I actually thought that one was worth mentioning and worth looking into, though. I'm talking about before this happened with the Packers. So I didn't think that was just fan blather. We should trade so-and-so. You know, they always come up with these trades that would never actually happen in real life. But I thought it was at least worth a look. And for all we know, the Bucks may have looked at it. I'm not sure how hard they did. And here's what I'll say about it, though. Because first of all, people are reacting to the trade already and making these broad proclamations. You can't do that with trades. You have to wait not just a few days or a few weeks or even a few months. You have to wait a few years. So with Dallas, everyone's like, oh my God, Dallas got fleeced. I can't believe they did this. The Packers, any team would have done what the Packers did. 2 first-round picks plus an established player up front also going to Dallas in the trade in order to get the prime years of Micah Parsons. For the Bucks, let's say, an example of what that would have looked like if the Bucks made the trade the Packers did, it would have been two first-round picks, obviously, and probably Vita Vea or Kalijah Kancey, something like that. Maybe Yaya. But, you know, one of those guys and two first-round picks. And all I will say is this. I don't think it's black and white right now. I think you can make an argument for both sides. Usually what happens in these trades, and they've done studies on this, when you make these blockbuster splash trades where one team's given up a star player and the other team is getting either draft picks or, you know, maybe prospects if you're talking about a different sport like baseball. But anyway, in the short term, obviously it goes a little bit better for the team making the deal. I mean, the Packers did not have Micah Parsons a week ago and the Cowboys did, and now the Cowboys don't and the Packers do. Just in the strict, very strict context of the 2025 football season, better for the Packers, not as good for the Cowboys. But those things tend to, after a while, to level out. Parsons may or may not be as good anymore. I mean, he's not, I mean, age-wise, not a problem. He is nursing a little bit of an injury. He just may not produce at the level he has been. There's no reason to believe he won't. And even if he does, that may be the case for a couple years. Then, look, these things have implications. That's big money Parsons got. There will be cap implications down the road for the Packers. There will also be draft pick implications down the road. Now, I think people, in general, kind of idolize the draft. I mean, you know how Americans are and you know how football fans are. I mean, we treat the draft like a major event, you know, not quite on the level of the Super Bowl or anything, but just a couple ticks below. I mean, we fans are, oh my God, the draft, first round picks. And in reality, first round picks, I mean, sometimes you really, really hit it, obviously, like the Bucs have with Mike Evans and others. But sometimes they're just guys, and especially if you're winning and you're picking in the, you know, late 20s or early 30s rather than picking in the top 10, which if you get Micah Parsons, I think your plan is, hey, we're going to be picking in the 20s or 30s. They're actually not that, like, people idolize the draft, not that big of a deal. You know, I would have given up, I absolutely would have given up two first round picks for Micah Parsons. Now, which player, that, you know, that's something else. And I don't blame the Packers for making the deal. But at the same time, you know, 3-4 years from now, the trade may not look as good. If you win the Super Bowl, looks great. But the Cowboys had Micah Parsons all those years and didn't win any Super Bowls. And didn't even make the playoffs some of the times, okay? So, you don't know. The Packers are better. And the whole thing is you do that type of trade where you think you're one guy away and this is a weak spot. It describes the Bucs because, I mean, the big weak spot for the Bucs is pass rush. And I think other than that, they're pretty well put together as a football team top to bottom. So, yeah, I mean, my only point is you can't say definitively the Cowboys got fleeced. The Cowboys might do very well with those extra first-round picks. They might be able to do very well with the extra cap space. I know we're talking about Jerry Jones here, you know, instead of like a more traditional general manager. But still, I mean, it may work out very well for them. It's just too early to say. But I will say if the Bucs had made that trade, I would have been intrigued, but not exactly turning cartwheels either. I would have been a little skeptical of it as well. There's just a lot you don't know. But him going to Green Bay, of course, I don't think helps the Bucs in the short term. I mean, the Bucs don't play the Packers this year. But obviously that's another team in the NFC. At least we hope, because we hope the Bucs will be a team in the NFC that's in the, you know, very, very thick of the playoff picture. That's another team that the Bucs could be competing against for something they both want come January. And that's one extra, you know, bullet in the chamber now that Green Bay has. Either way, I always just hesitate. Don't be reactionary. Don't jump on top of things. Let things play out a little bit because most of the time in life, you don't really know what you think you know, at least as soon as you think you know it. BobbyGameDay at yahoo.com is the email address. BobbyGameDay at Yahoo. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Oh, also, the schedules. The fridge schedules. Anybody still wants any of those, you can email me. I'll send you one. I've gotten a bunch of requests. I can send them to you at any time, but it's always nice to get it up there before the first game with the logos and the color and, you know, all that stuff. So email me if you want one of those. Looking at the upcoming season. Oh, here's another thing I always like to do on the show before the first game. Because one of the things I pride myself on, all my listeners, we want to be one of the smartest shows. I want my listeners to be one of the most educated of any listenership, of any podcast or radio show anywhere. So rules changes. It's always good to know the rules changes and know what's going on when you're watching a game on TV. I like knowing even more than the broadcasters do. A lot of times they're not sure And I like to have this stuff already clocked before the season starts. So let's go over real quick some of the rules changes for the 2025 season. There's nothing major this year, but there are a few that will be impactful. So as far as kickoffs, touchback now moving to the 35-yard line if the ball lands in the end zone and is downed or anything like, you know, any type of touchback, which used to be the 20, then they moved to the 25 and the 30. Now it's the 35. So they're really trying to enforce, or I should say encourage, the idea of more kickoff returns. And I said before, the only thing they need to do this is just to move the damn kickoff spot back to the 30 from the 35 so NFL kickers can't reach it as far. But by doing this, I guess they don't have to, because now kickers don't want it to go in the end zone, so they're trying to land these balls inside the 10, inside the 5, make guys have to field the ball, make guys have to start running out on a kickoff return. And so, you know, even if you have the leg to boom it through the end zone, 35 is pretty far on down the field now. So, I mean, teams don't want that. They're going to say, okay, hit it high, drop it in like the 5-yard line, and maybe we can tackle a guy at like the 15 or the 20 instead of giving up 15 yards. That's one rule change. Another one here, and this may not come into play for the Bucs. It does maybe once or twice a year. Overtime, okay? Overtime has evolved over the years from true sudden death to sudden death if it's a touchdown, but still not sudden death if one team gets a field goal, the other team gets it, to now what I've always said football overtime should be at every level. To me, this is the only way to do it. I've never liked college overtime. I don't like changing the rules of a game and playing what amounts to tiddlywinks or like a skills competition. Football's played on a 100-yard field with 10-yard end zones with offense, defense, and special teams, and punts and kickoffs and just football, okay? So I've always said it's not fair for one team to get the ball and then to do whatever they do with it, and then the game is over if they score a touchdown. And I've always thought one of the I might insult a few of my listeners right now, and I have to apologize, but not really if I do. One of the single dumbest running opinions people have when it comes to football overtime, when someone points out, hey, a team just went down the field and scored, the other team never got the ball. Well, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. There's always some complete blockhead moron who shouts out, oh, just play defense, dude. You don't like it? Play defense. Dumbest thing in the world you could possibly say. And I always think to myself when people say that, well, okay, but if you play defense, do you win? Like, no, then you still, like, one team only has to do one thing. The other team has to do two things, because if you play defense, you don't win. You just get the ball, then you get your chance, which is fair, by the way. Then both teams get a chance. But how come the other team didn't have to play defense? Why are you shouting at me for my team to play defense, even though I'm not even talking about the Bucs? I'm talking about any football game, when the other team didn't have to do that. Just play defense, dude. That's life, man. Tough. You should have done better on defense if you want to win. Now, hey, if you had said, we're only going to have one possession in overtime, we're going to flip a coin, you can choose offense or defense, and if the offense scores, they win, and if the defense stops them, they win, then that'd be fair. That's another thing I thought maybe could be an overtime solution, because it guarantees the game only lasts another 5-10 minutes, and I know they're all about safety and don't want, the game's going on another hour and all these snaps. So then you might have a point. That might not be the stupidest thing I've ever heard, if that were the case. But that's not how they do it. So I don't care what it is, offense, defense, whatever. Whatever one team has to do, other team ought to have to damn well do it too. So that's what they've done now. In overtime, both teams will possess the football as normal. Whatever happens. Whoever gets the ball first, they'll have the ball. Then the other team gets the ball, they'll have the ball. If one team scores more points than the other in those two possessions, then there you go. You got yourself a winner of the football game. If they have the same outcome, whether they both score 0 points, whether they both score 3 points, whether they both score 7 points, or whether they both score 6 points and both miss their extra point, whatever, okay, then we go to sudden death and just keep playing as normal, but it's sudden death now. And that's the real, it's still not perfect, but that's the closest to perfect you're going to get. The reason is because now that overtime coin flip, I don't even know what you're better off. On one hand, if you get the ball first, you don't have the benefit of knowing what you need. You don't have the benefit of playing with four downs instead of three because you're going to settle for a punt or a field goal. Whereas if you're down three or down seven and you've got that ball second, you know what you need and you're going all out. You might have a chance to go for it on a fourth down that you wouldn't have, you know. So it's always been an advantage to have the ball second, for example, in college overtime or something where both teams are guaranteed to possess it. In sudden death, it's an advantage to have it first. So do you want it first where if there is a tie after two possessions, then you do have the advantage because you get the first crack at it in sudden death, or do you want to get the ball second because you have the advantage in those first two possessions? In the regular season, I think you want the ball. Here's the problem, though. Here's the other problem with NFL overtime. They did not change the amount of time. It's still only a 10-minute overtime, which is ludicrous. Some of these overtimes, even before this new rule, one team would have the ball for 7 minutes, and they'd kick a field goal or get no points. And now the other team gets the ball. Oh, hey, you get your shot. Oh, except you have to run a 2-minute drill just because, oh, hey, there's only like, a, you know, there's 2:25 left in the whole game, and you're getting the ball for the first time. The other team just took 7.5 minutes, but you don't get that same amount of time. You just get 2.5, which is absurd. So I think I'd want the ball first just because I don't know if there's time for both teams in a 10-minute overtime to have a full possession each. I mean, if they both go three and out, there is. But, like, if one team amasses a scoring drive, there could be, like, you know, not enough time left. And all of a sudden, you're trying to play beat the clock. You know, one team takes a time-consuming drive. I don't know, you know. So I'd still want the ball first, but it's not like life or death now where it used to be, oh, my God, we lost the toss. We're playing Patrick Mahomes. They're going to go down and do their, you know. Both teams get a chance, as it should be. You can miss me with your absolute absence of logic. You maybe then your group of buddies where none of you have logic, you can all go jerk yourselves off to just play defense. But in the real world, like of math and analytics and, you know, common sense, whatever one team does, the other team should have to do as well. Okay, period. And in the playoffs, it is that way where there is no time factor. They still keep the time clock, but it goes on until someone wins. In this overtime, it will still be 10 minutes. It's going to be interesting to see when it comes up the first time where one team does their thing with the ball and then the other team is trying to run the hurry up and do the same thing with a fraction of the amount of time available to them. But that's one rule change. Another rule change, and this one's a good one, doesn't go that far, but it's a good one. Instant replay assist. NFL clubs voted to amend Rule 15 to expand instant replay's ability to advise on-field officials on specific plays. Now, for this one, for example, more things can be reviewed now if they are called is the operative word. So like things like face mask, before you couldn't review that. Now if there's a face mask called and the guy grabbed his collar instead of the face mask and the referee missed it, they can go back and fix that. That's good. They should be able to. What is going to get confusing to people is they haven't changed it all the way. You can't review things that happened that didn't get called. You can only review things that got called that you think didn't happen. So like Bucky Irving on Thursday Night Football last year when he got his head practically, you know, like The Exorcist, turned 180 degrees with a face mask, no call. You can't go back and say, hey, review that. He face masked it. You can only review things where a flag was actually thrown and maybe they can pull the flag. But it's still, it's progress, right? It's better than nothing. And I'm a big get it right guy. You know, I'm not some of these people that complain about replay. I was watching, I tweeted about this on my Twitter account the other day. I was watching the 30 for 30 Catholics versus convicts. They played it on Sunday on ESPN because Notre Dame was playing Miami that night. So they played it again. And great documentary in its own right. But specifically what I'm talking about here, because 1988 was an era before any replay at all. And just watching so many different plays from that game, it is mind-boggling how many just blatantly incorrect calls got made. And everybody just, like, I know some people like are nostalgic for this. I'm not one of them. But just the most blatant missed call. I mean, huge calls, like game-changing calls. And everyone kind of shrugs, like, okay, well, that's it. That's what they called. And the Cleveland Gary fumble is one, if you're familiar with it. That's the main one. There was like three or four more. There's one play in that game where Steve Walsh, the Miami quarterback, he's got his arm cocked to throw. He gets hit like in the ribs. His arm jerks forward in a throwing motion and the ball pops out. Like the most obvious incomplete pass ever. Like it's totally an incomplete pass. Referee rules a fumble. The whole crowd goes nuts. The announcers, oh, it's a fumble. And Notre Dame's defense runs off the field holding the ball. And Notre Dame gets in the end and score a game that ends up being a one-point game. They score a touchdown. Like, it happened in their own red zone. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, can you believe we used to let this stuff just go? Replay's not perfect by far, okay? And I have a lot of opinions on how it could be better. But I don't care. I will take any version of replay over that garbage. Because, again, it's ridiculous how many things that people miss and you have no means of fixing, and I don't think that's tolerable in any way. So, anyway, a couple more things this year that you'll be able to fix up and check out on review. Hopefully, the Sky Ref can get in there and do that. And the more things they can fix without this dumb challenge system, the better. If we see there's a mistake, everybody at home knows it in the first 15 seconds. If we at home know it, we don't need to go up to some, you know, lengthy review process, and a guy should be able to buzz down the Sky Ref, who's also watching the same thing we're watching, and say, hey, yo, man, that ball hit the ground, or yo, his foot was on the line at the 38. And you can fix these things in the matter of seconds, which they did. Last year, in fact, a lot of illegal man downfield and stuff like that, they were just getting on the fly, and I like that. I appreciated that. Oh, one last thing they're doing, which you saw this in the preseason. You didn't really see many examples of the other stuff in the preseason. But they're using the Hawkeye for the first down instead of the chains. There's still going to be chains on the sideline so you can see, you know, players can see where they need to get. But the chains aren't going to trot out and stretch out and measure. They're just going to use the digital line on the scoreboard. And so what this is not, don't get confused now, this isn't some super technological advanced way of getting first downs right or not. This is just preventing chain measurements and saving a little time. The inexact science of it all is the part we have yet to figure out, and that's the spotting of the ball. So don't think they figured out some perfect way to spot the ball. The referee's still spotting the ball the same as always, and it's very inexact and very difficult to do sometimes, especially in scrums, in short yardage, with a million different bodies around. That's not changing. Once they put the ball on the ground, then they use the digital Hawkeye. So all those things are things you might start noticing on Sunday at 1, if not on Thursday night, when the Cowboys and Eagles get together. But for this weekend, Bucks-Falcons, it's always nice to be 1-0. It's always nice to win a division road game, and it's always nice to have a game up on who you at least perceive to be your biggest rival in the division. All of those things are on the table with this game. I don't like starting with a division game bye. That's one rule change I would institute if I was commissioner. I would say no week one division. To me, you should get to play a game that's not in your division. Division games are too important. You shouldn't have that as your first one. But here we are in the balmy September. Well, it'll be the dome, but still, like, right off the gate, you got Bucks-Falcons. Bucks lost them both last year. That can't happen this year. Let's see what they can do. But anyway, besides the Bucks game Sunday, a great slate. A college football slate's just okay, actually, this weekend. It's not great. But there is no such thing as anything but a great slate because we just got out of a long, cold, dark stretch of no slate. And we got football wall-to-wall starting tomorrow. Enjoy every second of it, folks. And I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the Joes at joebucksfan.com, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Bucks coverage. I appreciate them giving me the platform, as always, and giving me the chance to get in front of all of you. So thanks to them. Have a great weekend. Enjoy all the football. Be safe. Have fun. And I will be back next week, hopefully talking about a 1-0 football team. But until then, whatever happens and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.